Okay, let's do this. The UFC 270 fight card recap. Start off with pay. California is one of the only states that discloses pay anymore for MMA. Specifically interested in the UFC, and what we saw is that the low pay is still, for a couple fighters, $10,000 to show. And we were told the UFC has had record profits and the UFC has increased pay, but yet the $10,000 to show was something we thought was gone, and we thought it had moved up to at least 12. Turns out that's not the case. And, you know, this is one reason the UFC has worked hard to keep pay from being disclosed on its fight cards, because it doesn't want people to know how low the pay is. Well, we know now the UFC still is paying out at $10,000 to show for some fighters, which for how much money the UFC is making, not something that they should be proud of. Also not something that the UFC should be proud of is the fact that Dana White not only skipped the UFC 270 press conference, post-fight press conference, but he was not there and did not, well, I think he was there, but he did not go into the octagon and put the belt on Francis Ngannou after Ngannou won the undisputed title. Now, if I'm Ngannou, I don't mind that so much. And maybe this was all worked out ahead of time. I don't know. But it's a bad look for White to skip out on a press conference and also to, you know, not give the belt to the champion. I know that when Tyron Woodley and Damian Maia fought at UFC 214, White was pretty much disgusted by the number of significant strikes that were thrown in that five-round fight. Fewer significant strikes were thrown in this fight. So I'm sure White wanted a giant Ngannou knockout. He did not get that. And Gon also fought, as I thought Gon would fight, a smart tactical fight. Cost him in the end, but to say, I'm going to guess that UFC President Dana White was pretty much disgusted with how the fight turned out and split the scene. Refereeing was good for the most part. Mike Beltran, I think, let two fights go a little too long. They probably could have been stopped earlier than they were, but egregious. I don't know if they were egregious, but they probably could have stopped earlier. Jason Herzog had a stand-up in the first fight of the night that was odd. Jesse Duvicius was landing elbows from inside the guard on the ground, and he stood that fight up with Kay Hansen, and that was questionable at best, which noticeable mostly because it was Jason Herzog, who is a well-respected and, you know, pretty much known as one of the best, if not the best referee in MMA right now. Joe Rogan, I don't know what Joe Rogan was thinking. He seemed to imply that Cody McKenzie is some kind of guillotine choke master during the Tony Gravely versus Simon Oliveira fight. That was not true. At best, McKenzie was a one-trick pony, and he wasn't even that good with his trick. He went 3-4 in the UFC and had two guillotine choke wins. So to me, Cody McKenzie is going to be remembered more as the guy who went into the octagon with the tag on his shorts yet, and not some kind of guillotine choke savant. Okay, let's go over the fights. Jasmine Jasdevicius, she used her reach well in the early going of her fight against Kay Hansen. She also allowed Hansen to move into range a little more than she should be comfortable with. She did a good job. She did a nice job of landing elbows from inside Hansen's guard once the fight got to the ground. I think she could have been a little more aggressive on the ground. But I think most of all, it was a great UFC debut from Jasmine Jasdevicius. What I liked was that she didn't overextend herself. She fought a smart fight. She fought within herself. I think that she will be more exciting in her next fight. I think she held back a little bit. I think she was fighting smart and tactical in this fight just to get the win in her UFC debut. She did that, and now I think we'll see more from Jasmine Jadavicius going forward. Kay Hansen, she struggled a lot in this, which was her UFC flyweight debut. She was 2-1 at 125 pounds before UFC 270, and both those fights happened before she was in the UFC. She struggled with a reach disadvantage early, overcame it, was good at moving in and out at a little bit, but she still struggled. What I think Hansen struggled with most of all in this fight was that she had a game plan, and when things went awry, she could not deviate from the game plan, did not have enough, I don't know, maybe reps, maybe enough time in the cage. She's still very young to, you know, get into a flow and work with what the fight gave her. She seemed to be more kind of forcing submissions and not letting the fight come to her. I think that's just age and skill and reps. She has skills. She needs to be able to harness those skills. And I don't know if it's the camp. I don't know if it's a mental thing. But she needs to just get a little more out of her head and more into the flow of the fights. Sylvania Gomez-Juarez showed she has good power and good timing, but she had little else than that. She got caught in an armbar after she knocked down her opponent, Vanessa Demopoulos, and just got submitted. Demopoulos took a big shot from Gomez, and what I liked here from Demopoulos was that she was able to take that shot, get dropped, recover, and then close her guard up and wait till she was fully recovered and then work towards that submission. So she did a very good job, and she got that armbar, got the win. It was a big win for Demopoulos, and I think more than the win, I think what we saw from Demopoulos in her after-fight or post-fight interview with Rogan was her charisma and her personality, and I think that really showed through, and she looks like she's going to be a fun fighter. So hopefully the UFC gives her some more TV time, lets her develop and show that charisma, show that personality, show that she is not just some boring fighter and that, you know, she is a more or less a character in a good way. Gennaro Valdez started out his fight with Matt Favola very aggressively, and the thing that he had was push forward aggression, good striking. What he didn't have was any type of defense. And so for when Favola pushed back and showed that he also could be aggressive and also powerful, Valdez kind of, he didn't wilt, but he was at a skill disadvantage. And Favola, you know, overwhelmed him, took the fight, beat him up, knocked him down, I think, 4 times officially. This is one of the fights that Beltran probably let go a little too long. Valdez was all heart and guts, and it cost him a little more damage than it should have. A nice performance from Favela. He said it wasn't as technical as he wanted, but it showed that he is someone who his opponents can't take lightly. They're not going to rush through him. They're not going to pressure him and get him off his game by being aggressive from the start. So a good showing from Favola, and it ended the first losing skid of Favola's MMA career. Jack Della Maddalena was someone that the UFC was high on before UFC 270. He was supposed to fight Varley Alves. Alves was out of the fight for, I think, an injury, and he got a short-notice opponent in Pete Rodriguez. Rodriguez tried, but Domodina's just striking was just too good. He's effective from both stances. His left is very good. He's got a very heavy left hand when he's fighting southpaw, good to the body. He's got a tight boxing guard. The UFC, when he got signed from the Dana White Contender Series card, said that they expected a lot from him, and I think this was a good first step from him. Victor Henry, another UFC debuting fighter, looked excellent. He was a little slower and a little less skilled than Jaime Barcelos, at least on paper, But he had heart. He showed pressure. He used volume. He used pace. And his confidence just helped him to stay in that bantamweight fight and take the unanimous decision win. Great, great debut. He took it on short notice. Barcelos was the biggest favorite on the card. So Henry got the big upset and showed a great, great debut. And I think because of his age, he's 34, I would expect Henry to be pretty aggressive in capitalizing on that win and trying to get back in there as much and as soon as possible. So very good debut from Victor Henry, who came in on short notice to beat a well-respected Jaime Barcelos. Trevin Giles showed that his power came with him from middleweight to welterweight, where he dropped, but he hurt Michael Morales early, but he made a mistake in going to the clinch after he hurt him. That allowed Morales to recover, and then Morales got the knockout. I think he'll regret the decision to go to the clinch instead of pursue the fight after he hurt Morales. Morales, another fighter who is debuting, he got rocked, and he the good, very good comeback. I think he capitalized on that mistake, and that is a sign of a good fighter, a smart fighter, a fighter with good fight IQ. Is that you are able to recover, and then you're able to go ahead and take advantage of what your opponent gives you. And what Giles gave him was a chance to score a knockout, and that's exactly what he did. Nurmagomedov had not fought since October 2020, and he did not look like he was interested in sticking around in the octagon all that long. He came out aggressive. He showed a lot of good striking techniques, a lot of mixed striking techniques, different techniques, different targets, and just ran through Stamen here, something that I don't think we've seen before. And he got the submission quickly, easily. The whole fight lasted 47 seconds, but Nurmagomedov did a lot of living in that 47 seconds and did a lot of impressing in that time as well. So keep an eye on him, and hopefully he can stay healthy and get back in there as soon as possible, because this was a real good fight to build on. And since he hadn't fought since October 2020, he really needed that big win and big performance, and he got it. Michelle Pereira had a tough first round against Andre Faolo, but he adjusted between the first and the second round, and that allowed him to take over the fight. He was a little reserved. He was being controlled in the first round, and then he adjusted and came back strong to win the fight in the second and the third. He took over. His opponent was not able to make those adjustments between the second and third, and that's what cost him. Had he adjusted and got back to controlling the range, controlling the location of the fight, he might have beat Pereira, but he didn't. And so a big win for Michelle Pereira, who I forgot is still fairly young. He's only 28, so he's now on a 4-fight winning streak. I don't know if he'll ever climb the rankings high just because of how reckless he is, but he's a fun fighter. He's an entertaining fighter, and he'll get a lot of opportunities from the UFC because of that. Now, that could hurt him. His style could hurt him in the long run as far as title shots or title aspirations, but it could help him in career longevity too. So it's a decision that Pereira is going to have to make. Is he going to be the fun guy, or is he going to be the serious guy, or can he mix that up and a little combination of both to be a fun, exciting fighter that can also climb the rankings? I think he's kind of leaning towards being the guy that fun and exciting and can climb the rankings, but we shall see. He's still fighting kind of middling talent, so as he steps up his game, we'll see how far he can really climb. Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueiredo was just a fantastic fight. I don't know if I can even explain how good that was. Impressive performance from everyone. What I was really impressed with was Figueiredo's ability to stick to the game plan. Sometimes he got a little over-aggressive, but his coaches were able to pull him back. I don't know if that would have happened in the past. So he put a lot of trust in his coaching team and listened to them and trusted them. And I think that's what got him the win. Had he been more reckless, I think Moreno would have been able to capitalize a little more on that. And Moreno was able to capitalize somewhat on that, but not enough to get the win. I think we're going to see a fourth fight from between these guys. Figueiredo actually called for it after the fight. I think we're going to see that. I don't mind it. I'm sure the rest of the flyweight division does mind it. I'm not going to be upset if they book this fourth fight, and if they book it right away, four in a row between these two. I know it stinks for the division, but these guys are going to have they've already had a pretty long rivalry. It's going to get longer. It's going to get more interesting. And I think they feed off each other. I think it's a good thing for the UFC. I don't know if it's a good thing for the division. It lets the division sort itself out underneath them, because let's remember, the UFC at one point did not want the flyweight division and was on its way out with the flyweight division. And, Moreno was released at one point. So I think they have a good rivalry here. Why not take advantage of it? Cyril Gane, main event. Cyril Gane, I think, lost the fight here more than Francis Ngannou won it. I knew Gane was going to fight a technical fight. I knew he was going to fight a smart fight. And he did that. What I didn't expect was that Ngannou would counter that with some wrestling. And what that did is it didn't allow Gane to score points. And so Ngannou's striking is bigger, it's more pronounced, it's more powerful, it does more damage when it lands. And so Ngannou might not have been the better striker, but his striking did more damage while they were on the feet. And so he got points for that, at least in the third, fourth, and fifth. And then the takedowns negated any scoring opportunities from Gane, really, because he didn't do anything much from the ground. And Gane only landed three significant strikes on the ground in total. So the ground game was not there to score, really. It was there to, I think, keep Gane from scoring. Smart plan? Maybe. Risky, definitely. But it got Ngannou the win. I think if Ngannou can add some ground strikes to his game, to his arsenal, and not just be a heavy top fighter on the ground, and be more aggressive with his ground striking, be more aggressive with maybe some submissions, at least threatening submissions, or working towards some submissions, then that adds to his overall skill set and makes him a scarier fighter, a more developed fighter, a fighter that is going to be harder to beat. I don't know what the future holds for Ngannou's contract. My gut tells me he's probably going to, because he said his knee was injured for this fight. I think what he's going to do is going to get surgery on that knee. He's probably going to, my gut tells me he's going to sit out for rehab and probably not fight. And unless the UFC can get him a contract he likes. And I think he probably leaves the UFC in 2023 when his contract is up time-wise, because I think that's what we know is, well, we think is going to happen now with the new contract developments and all that jazz, even with a championship clause. I'm going to look into this a little more on Sunday into Monday and have some more on this, but my gut tells me we're not going to see Francis Ngannou fight for the UFC again unless the UFC gives him a contract to his liking. Cyril Gane, I think, this is going to be a learning lesson for him. I think he's going to have to get a little more aggressive on his feet and maybe learn some more wrinkles on the ground, but I don't think it's the end of his title aspirations by a long shot. He is still relatively new to the MMA game. I think he takes this as a learning experience and develops from it. you know, much like Ngannou did with his loss to Stipe Miocic. She took that from and learned from it and developed. I think we see the same thing here from Gan, and I do believe that one day he will be a UFC champion. And that is my wrap-up for UFC 270. And we'll see what plays out. But the thing to watch now is Francis Ngannou's contract and what happens as far as that goes. Okay, it is time for UFC 270 Unanswered Questions, where I look at some things that occurred during the pay-per-view that happened on Saturday and figure out what's going to happen or where things are going or what is, you know, coming down. And so let's get started. UFC 270 Unanswered Questions. First one is Kay Hansen. So the question for Kay Hansen is she going to move from flyweight back down to strawweight? She had, I think, three other flyweight fights before Saturday. She went 2-1 in those fights, if I'm correct. And so she lost in her UFC flyweight debut. Didn't look fantastic. I think she has a good amount of skills. I just don't think that she has a good enough grasp of just flowing with the fight. I think she's in her head as far as this is what I need to do, ABC, as opposed to having a high fight IQ and just letting the fight come to her and adapting as things happen. I hope she stays at flyweight, and this is why. Because we know she's had a lot of outside the cage issues in her life, and that those things put a lot of stress on her. And I think the weight cut is just one thing that she doesn't need to worry about. If she can fight at, if she can make 125 with ease, I think you remove that stress from the equation for her and focus on having her get more comfortable in the cage and more comfortable with herself and her fighting style. Again, I think she has the skill to go far. She's still very young. I just think she needs a good team around her, a good support group around her, less things to worry about, and then she will get better. And so I hope the weight cut is one thing that she doesn't go back to doing, because I think that's just going to put more stress on her, and I think that will limit her upside. I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion. Who will Jake Della Maddalena get matched up against next? The UFC was very high on Della Maddalena when he got his contract in the Dana White Contender Series. Dana White had a lot of praise for him. Michael Bisping had a lot of praise for him. Lourdes had a lot of praise for him. And he looked good. He looked good at UFC 270 as well. But let's not forget, the UFC had him booked against a UFC vet for this card in Varley Alves, and Alves dropped out of the fight. So I expect Della Maddalena to get a stiffer test in his next fight, and we'll see where that goes. I think he deserves a stiffer test. He's only 25. I think you want to get a good feeling of what he can do and where he really sits in the division. I don't think that UFC 270 gave that picture because he was fighting an opponent who came in on super short notice and, while had a lot of finishes, I don't think was up to Della Maddalena's talent level. And so I think he is someone to watch. Also someone to watch, Victor Henry. I think he is 34, so he has not a lot of time, I don't think, here really to capitalize on his good fortune of getting into the UFC on short notice, winning a fight where he was a pretty significant underdog, performing excellently, looking great. And as good as he looked at UFC 270, I think that was probably not as good as he can look, because, again, he took this fight on short notice, and I think he has a high upside. The problem with Henry is he doesn't have time now. He's at his age, 34, as opposed to Della Maddalena, who is 25. I think you see a different kind of push forward for these guys. I think Henry needs to be aggressive in getting fights against talented fighters and getting himself up the rankings as fast as he can, taking fights when they make sense, but as soon as they are possible and as soon as he can to develop into something of a threat and move up the rankings. I think he can move up the rankings. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how his career moves forward, but Victor Henry had a great, great, great fight at UFC 270. Michelle Pereira, what is his upside and does it matter? This is something I am not really sure about. He's 28. He's talented, but he's also talented and fun. And sometimes those things don't mesh with fighters. Sometimes a fighter realizes that my way of success and my way of moving forward in the UFC is by being a fun fighter. And then that takes away from maybe moving up the rankings. When the entertainment factor outweighs the sport factor, and I'm not saying that that's wrong. I'm saying there are places for that in the UFC, and you can carve out a pretty good career for yourself if you're the fun fighter who can land on main cards and entertain the fans. The UFC has a place for those fighters, and they can make a decent living, but the problem is that they oftentimes don't move up the rankings just because, you know, the entertainment factor outweighs the talent and outweighs the sport, and then they're only seen in one way. So Pereira's at a point where he's going to have to decide what he wants to do, I think. I think he is talented, but I also think he enjoys the entertainment factor as well. And so he can be a little reckless. He can be a little sloppy. He can be a little off the wall. And again, that's no knock. That can be a successful career path for him. But what's he going to do? And I think he's still only 28. Let's remember that. He has room to figure this out, and he has time to figure this out. So I don't think that's a rush for him. But I think if he wants to carve out a path to the title, I think he needs to rein his craziness back a little bit. And that might hurt him with the fans, and that might hurt him with the UFC. So we'll see how that goes. But he's on a 4-fight winning streak. He looked good at UFC 270, and I'm sure he's going to land on another main card. So are we going to see 4 or 5 fights between Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo? And I think we should, and I think we will at least see 4 fights. Now, will that fight come 4 in a row? I don't know. Figueiredo said he wanted to fight Moreno in Mexico. And if that happens, I think that the UFC should make that fight. We saw the pop that Moreno got in Anaheim. I think that is exponentially more in Mexico. I think Figueiredo should be kind of praised for wanting to go into quote-unquote hostile territory and fight Moreno. And I think that's a good storyline. The downside is you're holding up the flyweight division, which I don't know if the UFC really cares all that much about holding up fighters below these two in the flyweight division. Remember, Moreno was released from the UFC when they were toying with the idea of getting rid of the division. So it's not like they are entirely tied to 125 pounds. It's just kind of there, and we'll see how it goes. But I say, yes, at least 4 fights. If it's as entertaining as the first 3 were, then, yeah, 5 fights. Is that crazy? Yeah. Is that shooting the rest of the division in the foot? Yeah. But again, I don't think the UFC cares too much about what goes on in the rest of the division when it has 2 fighters as popular and as entertaining as Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo. So I expect to see 4 fights at least from those two. So when I was thinking about UFC 270. I wrote, if Ciryl Gane wins, will the UFC bury him? Or if he loses, does he have to wait a long time for a rematch? Well, he didn't win, but I think the UFC is probably going to bury him as a boring fighter regardless, because let's not forget, Dana White tried to do this before, tried to make Gon sound boring and just like a fighter that the UFC and the fans didn't want to see. I disagree. I think he's a smart fighter. I think he's a tactical fighter. I think that he might not be everyone's cup of tea. I think he puts the win in front of entertainment, and I think that costs him in the eyes of the UFC and some fans, but I think he has a bright future. I think he learned a lesson at UFC 270, and I also think his road to a title fight, a second title fight, is going to be pretty lengthy. I think the UFC is going to maybe try and match him up against fighters that have wrestling skills now, and maybe that will push him down the rankings a bit. Can he develop his defensive wrestling? I think he can. I think he's a very talented athlete, but I don't think the UFC cares for his style or cares for him that much. I think the UFC wanted him to beat Francis Ngannou, but I think that was because they wanted Francis Ngannou not to have the title. And now that Gon is not the champion, I think the UFC kind of not buries him, but tests him against fighters who he will have a hard time with. I'm thinking Curtis Blaydes is one of those fighters. So I won't be surprised if Ciryl Gane's next fight is up against Curtis Blaydes. And that is going to be a test of Gane's wrestling skills of the highest caliber. So did Gon lose or Ngannou win? I think Gon lost. And I say that because in the scoring criteria, damage is what we go on here. And I think if Gon had been more active on his feet and racked up a little more damage, I think he could have won the fight. I think an argument might even be able to be made. I'm not going to make it. But I think people could see Gon had won the fight at UFC 270. I mean, it wouldn't be a robbery per se. And I say that because Ngannou did not do anything with his ground position. He didn't threaten submissions. He only landed three significant strikes in all that time he had Gon on the ground. So I think Ngannou, what he did was prevent Gon from scoring more than he scored himself. Now that's probably something that someone could argue, but that's how I look at the scoring rules. And I just don't think he did enough damage on the ground to warrant giving him an overwhelming win in those rounds. What he did do, though, is prevent Gon from doing anything offensive, and I think that's what won him the fight more than the damage that he did. So I think Gon lost more than Ngannou won. Had either fighter been more active and more damaging on the feet, I think the fight could have went either way. So just something to think about. Ngannou did a good job in keeping the fight on the mat. I won't deny that, but he didn't do much with the position. And in the scoring, you must do something with the position. He didn't do that. Which leads to the next question. Where did Dana White go? I know he doesn't like Francis Ngannou. I know Francis Ngannou does not like him. I know they're at loggerheads here. But to not even get into the octagon for the title presentation seems a little childish, seems a little mean-spirited, seems a little, you know, silly, to be honest. Now, I grant it, Ngannou probably did not want Dana White to give him the belt, and that's fine too. But at least, you know, get in the octagon. And the fact that he didn't show up at the press conference was childish, immature. But again, he probably would have made a fool of himself at the press conference by shitting on Ngannou, shitting on Gon, and he just would have just been kind of embarrassing to the UFC. So maybe it was better that he disappeared, because we know he can't really control his opinion. He's not the best representative of the UFC in situations like this where he himself was not entertained. Was I entertained by the main event? Yeah, I thought it was very tense, and I think that tension playing out and wondering what was going to happen gave me a good sense of entertainment. I don't think that a lot of people will share that, but my opinion is I'm more interested in the sports side of things than the entertainment side of things, and so maybe I like a fight that plays out a little more tense than some other people do. Yeah, to each their own in that matter. So, will the injury of Francis Ngannou be a sticking point? I don't know about this. This is just something that popped into my head. Ngannou said that he was hurt bad. His knee was damaged pretty bad going into this fight, and that he probably could have pulled out. And so I can see the UFC being vindictive here if Ngannou did not list that in his pre-fight medicals. And again, I don't know if he did or didn't. I'm just kind of guessing here. If he did not, I think the UFC could play games with the insurance and say, well, you didn't tell us you were hurt during training, and so therefore it didn't happen. And it could be a little, it could be a sticking point in this, in not in the contract fight, but in, it could get wrapped up into that. It could become a part of it, maybe. Maybe I'm being a little conspiracy minded here, but I don't think the UFC will want to pay someone that it doesn't think is going to be around. And I don't think Francis Ngannou is going to be around, which leads to this question. Have we seen the last of Francis Ngannou in the UFC? I think we have. He pointed this out in the post-fight press conference where he said that his contract now is for three fights or 1 year. He has fought on average one time a year over the past 3 years, I think he said. I didn't double check that, but I'm just going to go with what he said. And so not fighting one time in a year is not going to be that big a deal for him. If he needs surgery on that knee, it's going to be less of a bigger deal for him. And so I think Ngannou waits this out. And unless the UFC comes to him with a very lucrative deal, a deal that includes an out for a boxing fight, then I think we have seen the last of Francis Ngannou in the UFC. Will he'll hurt himself in the short term, I think, by doing that. But I think in the long term, if there's still interest in him, and I think there will be in January 2023, I think he will be able to parlay his time off here into a maybe a lucrative boxing fight. If not, I think he'll have his fair share of suitors waiting to pay him a fee much bigger than what the UFC would have given him to fight in their promotion. So I think unless the UFC makes it worth Francis Ngannou's while, we have seen the last of Francis Ngannou in the UFC. I don't really care either way about this in that I think we'll see him fight again, and I want to see him fight again, but I also want to see him fight again in the promotion that is going to earn him the most money. And that's barring some kind of big change in policy and business perspective, I do not think that that is with the UFC. So I think it'll be a surprise to see Francis Ngannou in the UFC again. And that is my unanswered questions for UFC 270.